But then Vanessa, what the fuck? You stalker. Like, you fucking
back the door. Back
yeah,
open.
You fucking creeper. Like, what are you? Oh, yeah, I'm just going to peek back in to see what they're doing. What the fuck, Vanessa?
Yeah. Not good for Vanessa.
Yeah, bad look for Vanessa.
Hey, Upper East Siders and all you scandal-loving listeners out there, you just tuned into the Non-Judging Breakfast Pod, where the coffee is hot, the waffles are fresh, and the gossip is hotter than ever. My name is Leaf, and I'm your seasoned Gossip Girl veteran.
And I'm Steve, and I'm exploring the glitz and glamour of the Upper East Side for the very first time. I'm your newbie, your greenhorn, your, I don't know, Leaf, what do you call the new kid on the block in Gossip Girl terms?
I think they would label you as a project. You know, the girls have a potential to be a Blairite.
Well, then dress me up in an Eleanor Waldorf original and let's get started.
Sounds good.
So here's the deal, folks. Leaf is a seasoned Gossip Girl veteran watching from when the first show first aired, and I'm watching for the very first time. And together, we're your dynamic duo dissecting all the drama, dirt, and sometimes questionable fashion choices of this iconic 2007 TV show.
That's right. Each week we're going to break down all the schemes, secret hookups, and couture catastrophes. And trust me, there are plenty of them.
And because we are all about inclusivity here at the Non-Judging Breakfast Pod, there is always room for you at the Non-Judging Breakfast table. Whether you are a newbie like me or a seasoned veteran like Leaf, go ahead and grab your coffee, a mimosa, or some of Nate and Chuck's special medicine if it's that type of morning, and let's dive into it.
All right. Today we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 7, Victor Vitrola. The original air date was November 7th, 2007. Do you get the reference?
The reference, Victor Victoria, I've never actually seen the movie, but I'm aware of it. I know that there's something to do with, I believe, like burlesque drag show, something like that.
Yes, I actually just watched this for the first time last night, and it was came out in 82, but it was set in 34, and it definitely felt like it was set in 1934. which, you know, at one hand, it's some aspects were somewhat progressive. There were several openly gay characters, including the third build, Robert Preston, who was, you know, openly gay. But the main character played by Julie Andrews is a woman soprano. She's English, but she is in Paris and she can't find work as a woman. But apparently in the 30s, it was the equivalent of a drag show, but woman impersonators, they called them.
Oh, okay.
Were the pop all the rage. So this guy, you know, Robert Preston's character Toddy sees Julie Andrews, who's Victoria, you know, failing at an audition because, you know, she's professionally trained opera singer, but apparently that's not what they want in Paris.
Right.
But he gets the idea. Well, because he later sees her like at a restaurant, like planning to dine and ditch because she's super poor and can't afford, she's can't afford.
Right.
She actually, it's actually really fun. Like, the movie is really funny because it's got that old style comedy. Like, she brings a cockroach in her purse because she's going to put it in her salad at the end of the meal.
Right, yeah.
So she can get out of paying.
Yeah, which, yeah, that is such a, that classic trope, which you also kind of reflect back to that 1930s type of trope, even though it was a, you know. Yes.
So the second lead, the male lead, is James Gardner. And she's a woman pretending to be a man impersonating a woman, singing in cabaret.
Right, yeah.
And James Gardner is like this, you know, gangster businessman type, and he starts falling in love with her and questioning his sexuality a little bit. But he thinks from the beginning that there's no way that that's actually a man.
Right, yeah.
And when they do finally kiss, like, he says, like, it doesn't matter if you're a man. But we as the audience saw earlier in the movie, you know, spoilers, you know, obviously, for this movie, if you've never seen it. But he sees her in the bathroom because he's spying on her in the bathroom. So he actually knows that she is a woman.
Right. Yeah.
So they could have been progressive and say, like, you know, okay, he's going to fall in love with this person. Who cares what you know? What gender she is.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not really what happens.
Yeah. But, you know, at that time, probably wouldn't have been able, you know, that they probably wouldn't have been able to get away with that in the 70s at that point.
Well, it came out in 82.
Oh, 82. Well, early 80s still.
Which is definitely, you know, David Bowie area.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But still, so his character actually does get, like, beat up by his gangster business partners because he does start, like, dating her. Like, he dates her while she's still performing as a man.
Yeah.
And, like, he's, like, really conflicted about that, but, you know, he still wants to, you know, fuck this hot woman.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's that
tracks.
So there is some, you know, overlap. There's definitely the cabaret aspect in this episode.
Yeah, and, yeah. You know, and
there you do see the one, you know, cross dresser there, the drag queen.
Yeah, there is. And you know, just that burlesque, you know, the burlesque show atmosphere too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The IMD episode description for this episode is: Serena and Dan finally acknowledge they are crazy about each other. Jenny discovers a secret about her parents, and Blair is once again devastated by Nate's actions.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot. And it's funny that doesn't mention anything about the title plotline.
No.
It doesn't even mention the Chuck story arc.
But that's pretty typical for the episode descriptions. These are the episode descriptions that came out from CW, like, before the episode came on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got, it was directed by Tony Warmby, who's done 10 episodes of The OC, 7 episodes of Gossip Girl, Supernatural, Bones, 90210 Reboot, Crossing Jordan, and The X-Files. But, like, really, for the last, like, 10 years, he's done strictly NCIS and their various spinoffs. So he's done 89 episodes directed. I'm sure he's making good money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
good for him.
Network TV. I mean, if you never refuse a network TV job.
Yeah.
I remember when Kiefer Sutherland took 24. And I remember thinking, wow, why is he taking this big step from being this Hollywood movie star? Why is he going to TV? And then I saw an interview and he's like, a steady paycheck for like 24 weeks. Yeah. Like, no doubt.
Plus, if you can get a show to 100 episodes, you're basically set for life.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get residuals forever.
Yeah. Which is something I didn't realize when I was, 20 some years old.
Episode written by KJ Steinberg, which I think is a woman. She did 4 episodes of Gossip Girl, 9 episodes of This Is Us, and some various other small things. Nothing too special. And you guys, anything else about that?
I wanted to, not about that. I'll wait until you move on into other stuff. I have a note in here for when we move on to other things. We have another entry into the number nine.
Well, go ahead. I mean, next thing is going right into the episode.
Oh, okay. So we do have Tommy Eaton 4 from TikTok. And Tommy Eaton is actually also a friend of mine that I used to teach with out in California. But he had brought up the band The Execs. And I never heard of these guys. And I look them up and they have like a few million listens on Spotify. Like they were around in the 90s and I just completely missed these guys. I played the first couple of their singles that showed up. Nothing that I ever heard at all. I feel like timeline switch somewhere, or they're just that forgotten.
Yeah, I'll have to check them out. I've never heard of them either.
Yeah, never heard of them.
Well, keep it coming, Tommy.
Yeah, keep it coming.
Let's go ahead and get into the episode. We open. Have you heard Upper East Siders? Burlesque is all the rage again, and sometimes a little raging is exactly what you need. Gossip Girl monologues as the episode opens with a grainy film shot of a burlesque show. The letterbox pulls out, and Blair is performing a striptease on the stage as Chuck sits in the audience entranced.
Wait, that's Blair?
And as always, Chuck is aiming to be ahead of the curves, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, so, and we don't realize it's Blair at the time. I mean, like, we know it's Blair. You can't watch that and not know it's Blair. But that is that setup is so great because, like, who is that girl? I have no idea. Yeah. You know, like, it really worked.
Yeah, and then we do flashback to the same club 2 days earlier as Chuck is with Blair explaining his plans to open a nightclub called Vitrola. What do we think of the use of medias res here?
Well, for one, I want to go back to that opening scene where they're dancing. You get that shot of Chuck with that beautiful Vitrola right in the center of it too. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's eye catching, and it just brings that the episode title and the title of the club, everything just, you know, kind of comes together already in those first moments when you see that. It's such a beautiful piece there too.
Yeah. Medias res? Any thoughts of the use?
I'm unfamiliar with the term medias res.
So it's the concept of starting the story like in the middle. Like,
oh,
the most famous example is probably Hamlet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. I actually, I love it. I love when we have to kind of, I think that a huge writing problem that a lot of people have is starting their story too early. And so for me, somebody who loves short stories, somebody who loves getting right to the point, using as little words as possible to tell a story, mm-hmm. I love when that technique is used.
Yeah, so as long as it's not overused.
Right, yeah.
I think Smallville got in the later seasons got into the habit, like they use it like a lot in like the last 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I wasn't really watching much by then, but they use it a lot. I feel like even in earlier, like that there are many of those. Oh, here's the big tease. I think, like, when he learns to fly, I feel like they do that.
And he didn't actually learn to fly until the last
episode. Not fly, when he learns to jump really fucking high. That episode where they teased all summer that he was going to fly, and then he just jumped really high. Anyway, I was so mad at that.
Like, the first time he really jumped high was when Lionel and Martha were held hostage at Luther Corp, and he like jumps from the building.
There's sometime he jumped there. I think it may even have been a red kryptonite thing, one of the first ones, but he like when he jumps, it just ripples out from the ground around him. And like all
you're thinking of the season 4 premiere?
Yes. Because all summer the whole tagline was look up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that was not actually Clark per se. So that was he spent the whole off season summer in like locked in the cave getting reprogrammed by Jor-El and he was Kal-El.
Yeah, that's what it was. And I just remember being like, you bastards.
No tights, no flights.
But anyway, back to Gossip Girl.
Yes.
In this scene, it is the first time we've seen Chuck sympathetic. Like, truly sympathetic. Truly nervous. Like, talking to Blair. Mm-hmm. He's eager for Blair's approval.
Yes.
You know? And
he values her opinion.
He does. And he sees her as an equal. He always has. He's always treated her as someone on his level who can play the game on his level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can see that her approval really means a lot to him, especially because the only person on Earth that can make Chuck nervous is Bart Bass. and he's got to present this to him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and apparently Blair, you know, he is a little.
He's like she's the pre-approval.
Almost. Yeah, like, yeah. Like if Blair thinks this is a bad idea, it's probably a bad idea.
So we move on to Nate's townhouse. His mom tells him he has to go to rehab, and a rehab of his choice. When Anne leaves the room, the captain tells Nate that he will make sure Nate doesn't end up at an institution. Way to go, Dad.
Yeah, good job. There you go. Way to come through for him. I love that Nate just doesn't, he just sees through all the captain's bullshit. But the captain's also like, you know, I landed the Waldorf account and you landed the Waldorf. You didn't land shit. Ring landed the Waldorf account.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Your wife got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Your wife got it.
With and her money.
One ring to bind them all.
The Vanderbilt diamond.
The Vanderbilt diamond.
Yes. We shift to Brooklyn, and Jenny is on the phone with Vanessa looking for the bracelet that fell off at the masquerade. Rufus is having an argument with Allison on the phone, and we get Rufus. Irritated response to Jenny's question. Yeah, I think I saw that next to the ambiguous vague thing by the nondescript place.
Yeah, because, you know, telling you that I lost a shiny fucking diamond is really nondescript because that's so, you know, in place in this house.
Way to take your misdirected rage out on your daughter.
Yeah. Well, at least I'm sure he won't do that again. Rufus, man, I'm not ready to talk about you yet. I'm not ready to talk about Rufus yet, but we'll talk about Rufus.
Oh, boy. Dan and Serena are at school facing the same problem that has plagued teenagers since the teenagers were a thing, finding a comfortable or at least semi-private place to make out.
Yeah. Yeah. Join theater. There's always a couch somewhere.
Well, I like Dan's comment about the plague of the Manhattan teenager, no cars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we go on to Jenny arrives at school and is confronted in the hallway by Nate. Nate tries to buy Jenny's silence for the mix-up at the masquerade. They are interrupted by Blair, who has a missing bracelet. Blair threatens Jenny to not keep secrets. Talk about getting it from both sides.
So when Blair sits down. Well, first of all, Nate comes in with some strong arm captain tactics.
Yeah, that was not a good look for Nate.
It was not a good look for Nate. I'm going to give you these chocolates to shut up. I bought you some really super fancy chocolates to keep your mouth shut about the way that I fucked up.
Mm.
And as soon as Blair sat down, it's so funny because we've talked about Nate the himbo, right? But like part of that quality is also knowing how to manipulate those situations. And the way that he pivots.
Yeah.
On a dime. Boom, I got you these chocolates. I'm so sorry I messed up, baby. It was like, damn.
You see the look on Jenny's face, too.
Yeah.
She caught it.
Yeah. Oh, because Jenny doesn't miss a thing, right? Jenny doesn't miss a beat. And so, yeah, I was really disappointed in Nate. Things were looking... Nate's stock had been plummeting, you know, from the previous couple of weeks. And it looks at this point like it is still in a downfall at this point in the episode.
And well, up until last week, his stock, so it's been plummeting from the beginning, but starting last week and definitely in this week, it's actually been his fault. Like before it was like just circumstance.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He just had a shitty life.
Yeah. Before it was usually the shit that was putting the captain up. Captain related bullshit.
Yeah.
And the whole being in love with someone that you're not dating.
Being with someone you're not in love with.
Yeah. All of those things.
Yeah. But now, like, at the party, go like trying to say you love you to Serena. And now with
this. Kissing her.
Yeah.
Kissing the wrong person. And then going up to the wrong person, calling her that name again to say that you know what you did. God. And then trying to buy her off with chocolate.
She looks so awkward that first day when she first came up to.
Bad look. But at least we know, if there's one thing we know about Jenny, she's great at keeping secrets.
Yeah. man, we'll get to that scene. That's a great scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
We move on to act two. Bart and Lily have an intimate moment interrupted by Chuck, who is coming to his father to present his business plan for the Vitrola. They set plans for a meeting. Chuck seems very eager to please his father.
Couple big things in this scene that really stood out to me. The first was, I mean, the interaction with Lily was fantastic. And like, I loved her reaction to Chuck. I loved their interaction. I loved all of that. When Chuck asks, "You're serious about this?" Like, you can see that there's that thing, that there's something triggered in Chuck. And you don't quite see, is he happy? Is he upset about this? But he does have a visual emotional reaction. It's hard to read, but he has one. Yeah. You know what I mean? Another big thing that stood out with, oh, the other line that I loved in this is when Bart sees him walk in with the folder and he says, "What's going on? Are you being arraigned for something?"
Well, because he's wearing a suit.
Yeah, he's wearing a suit and had the binder He goes, "What's going on? Are you being arraigned for something?"
Chuck's a bad boy. Blair and Serena are in the courtyard talking about Dan and Serena's intimacy level. A lot of internalized misogyny in this conversation. Is it weird if a guy wants to slow things down?
Yeah, and after you had mentioned that, I saw that in your notes about the internalized misogyny, and it doesn't end there. I mean, there's a lot of that in this episode from Blair, Serena, Vanessa. I feel like the only person who's not and the captain's wife, like, there's a lot of that in this episode, starting with this scene. Yeah. and maybe even other scenes that I didn't at this point that
well, we I haven't. Mean it's just in all media pretty much.
it really is.
And then so we get that scene. Dan is having a dream about being bad at sex and everyone is judging him. Dan says, "Sex is meaningful, like art, and you don't rush art." And
then art?
Yeah, Cotty responds with an upside down scorecard. Who's art? Which I think was a good actually bit of writing by the show, because it shows Dan as an unreliable narrator. Because we do know that Cottie is actually quite smart, but Dan sees her as being an airhead.
I was going to bring that exact thing up. I really loved that. That we know that these two are far smarter than what they've shown anywhere else. And that we kind of know, as we've discussed previously, that their involvement in this world and their status as Blair's minions is a vehicle to their own success.
Yeah.
You know, they know what they're doing very much. Mm-hmm. And Dan just sees them as these mindless
minions.
Yeah. Minions. And it really did. That unreliable first person narrator is such an amazing tool. And they used it so great in this scene. And they use it a few times in this episode. Like, yeah. I love the dream sequences that we see.
And then Dan's dream merges with the real world as he wakes up to the sound of Rufus once again arguing on the phone with his wife.
Yep.
Now Dan, who knows Alice is having an affair, Jenny secretly overhears their conversation, that is Dan and Rufus. But when she walks in, neither Humphrey man want to tell her what they were talking about.
Yeah. So first of all, Rufus. First of all, you have a fucking cell phone. Go outside. And you do say, oh, Dan, I didn't know you were in there. But check before you go yelling on the phone with your soon-to-be ex or whatever, with your whatever ship that you have going on.
Yes.
And then Dan. That was shitty. That is shitty big brothering, Dan Humphrey. Like, Jenny knows. She already knows. And now she was just told, now I cannot rely on any of the men in my life who I, after being fucking manipulated by a fucking man who kissed her against her will the week before. So.
And once again, we end the scene with Taylor Munson just staring daggers into the camera.
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes it feels like Jenny is honestly the only person who really understands what's going on.
All right. And then let's see. I lost my place.
That was 10.
That was 10, yeah. And so Nate calls his dad on his way to their meeting, but his father has to cancel for business. Nate looks devastated. In case you didn't catch the parallel between Rufus and the captain, both lying to their kids, the narrator points it out for you.
Yeah, yeah. They're all lying to their kids.
Yeah.
And Rufus, whose stock has constantly gone up on mostly on his parenting, has now just been fucking shitty.
Yeah.
And I'll even
he's definitely letting his own personal things affect his parenting.
Affect his parenting. Yes. That's where I was going with it. Keeping a secret from your kids that secret is, you know, your mom's banging someone else. Yeah, you keep that secret. You know, you don't say to your kids, your mom's cheating on me. That's not yours to tell. That's hers to tell. And I can even see telling them but like, it's not the right thing to do. Now, when they know and lying to them, and that's a different thing. It's the lying that's really shitty. And it's also, like you said, letting your own personal shit be more important than your parenting.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say I'm innocent. Like, I've been a dad for 20 years and I've fucked up more than I've gotten it right, and especially going through a divorce, especially
definitely tough.
Yeah, exactly.
At the Vitrola, Chuck is flirting with one of the dancers when Bart arrives. Bart unloads on Chuck. As Bart is leaving, Chuck spots his father getting into the limo with a beautiful young woman that is definitely not Lily.
Definitely not Lily, and he's handsy with her.
Yeah.
He is handsy with her
when he
escorts her into the car. Not
small
on the thigh. First the thigh, then the small of the back. And them's flirting moves.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't touch women that way that aren't my wife, because that is telling them something that that is sending an indication I don't want to send.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And then we get at the Waldorf penthouse, Eleanor and Blair are prepping for the Archibald dinner tomorrow. More of the parents are trying to force Nair.
Yeah.
Which is just the yeah. Blair Nate shit.
Well, thing. They sure rip the hair off one hair at a time, don't they?
Yes.
Or I guess Nair burns the hair off, doesn't it? Either way, Blair's excitement when Eleanor is like, Nate's talking about engagement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nate is.
Well, actually, I think she did. Yeah, like she was excited about it, that because she thought he was like serious. She thought like if she thought Nate was taking it seriously for real, she would like that.
I mean, Eleanor's reaction when she said Blair is like, Nate said that, she's so excited. She's so lit up. And she even says later on, like, for the first time, I see that he sees me the same way that I've seen him. She says that to Jenny later, which we'll get to. But when she says, Nate said that, Eleanor's response is like, yeah, Nate said it. Yeah, I'm sure that Nate's the one that said it to his parents.
Right, I think it was just
a slight sort of nod, like.
And then, so the next scene, we see Nate he sees his father buying more drugs.
The most privileged drug deal ever. Hey, man. You want to buy these? they're all discreet in the thing, but then just so, like, right out in the open. So
that's why they go into the stairwell. Everything goes in the stairwell.
Yeah. But, like, it's like an open stairwell. It's not like the emergency escape stairwell. It's like the main staircase. Yeah. Oh, the captain.
Yeah, captain. But I mean, I'm not really gonna judge him for buying coke. But still.
I'm not judging him for buying coke. I'm judging the drug deal for how it went down in a populated area with no discretion whatsoever.
Good for them for being privileged enough to buy drugs in the open. Good for them. We should all.
I thought this was America.
We should enjoy that. All should enjoy that privilege.
Well, okay, that I can agree. I can agree with to that with, on some level.
Back in Brooklyn, Serena and Dan have the loft to themselves. Things are getting hot and heavy when Vanessa comes through the window. Dan quickly ushers Vanessa out the door and returns to Serena, but Vanessa can't help sneaking another look. Dan and Serena begin to resume their makeout when Rufus calls in from the kitchen that he is home.
First of all, Dan, you threw the wrong girl again. You threw Serena off the bed. I get maybe you were startled, but you threw her off the bed when Vanessa shows up. Bad look, son. It's a bad look. Vanessa, what the fuck?
I can't really, like you said, I think he was mainly just startled there.
Yes, I completely agree. It's just not a good look.
Yeah. He immediately gets up and pushes Vanessa right out the door, though.
Right, right. My then follow-up.
Collects his wits. He immediately does the right thing. He's good.
Like I said, not a good look, but he does the right thing. But then, Vanessa, what the fuck? You stalker. Like, you
open
fucking
the back the door. Back
yeah,
open.
You fucking creeper. Like, what are you? Oh, yeah, I'm just going to peek back in to see what they're doing. What the fuck, Vanessa?
Yeah. Not good for Vanessa.
Yeah, bad look for Vanessa. Yeah. And I do like that Dan is like, the window is now not how you come in here.
Yeah.
Like, this is not
boundaries.
Boundaries. You come through the front door now.
Let's see if Vanessa recognizes those boundaries.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And then we get at the back of the Waldorf penthouse. Blair tells Jenny about the Archibald diamond. Nate plans to give to her. Jenny is feeling guilty, reveals the masquerade mix-up. Blair, tears forming in her eyes, dismisses Jenny for good.
Yes. Did I miss something? What scene is that?
Oh, shit. We did skip some scenes, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Sorry. So Chuck is drunk outside the palace and has a heart-to-heart with Lily. Lily is a good parent to everyone but her biological children.
Yeah. My note here is Lily giving parenting advice, question mark.
So this is a kind of running theme. Lily is a great parent to everyone but her biological children.
Yeah. And because I said, what does Lily know about being a good parent? And that's and is this the first time we're seeing this? Because she's sweet to Chuck. And
she was also like decent. She was good with Nate. She was like real friendly with Nate. And she was kind of a little sparry with Dan, but I thought it was kind of cute, their interactions.
Yeah, and in fact, even to that degree, she did have some level of concern for Dan at
that one episode. Yeah.
But then Chuck
lets slip about Bart getting into the limo with the other woman.
Yeah, and man, Chuck, you had every right to do that.
Dimes his dad out.
Yeah, and man, like, your dad hosed you. I love Chuck in this whole scene. Again, Chuck is sympathetic in this episode, and when he says, like, the line of, he started from nothing, and now he has everything. I started from everything. If the only way to impress him is for me to start from nothing, why doesn't he take it all away?
Yes.
The
Chuck glow up is definitely in full effect now.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. And like, you know, I'm not forgetting what happened in episode one. What is happening here, this self-awareness is, and that moment of like, why not just take it all away? All I want to do is impress him, and I can't because I'm already rich. And I'm already rich because of him. Yeah. Just take it all away. It was very moving.
Yeah. Definitely. They're definitely trying to make you feel something for Chuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at Nate's house, he confronts his mother about his father's problem, but she is in a complete denial. But did Anne know? The captain's coat. It was Captain's coat from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, she pulls the ripcord pretty quick. You know, it's either she already knew, she at least suspected, you know, but was willing to play along as long as everyone else was.
I think from the later scene, it's pretty clear that she did know.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think so too. And I also feel,
which is now makes Anne just as bad a parent as the captain, pretty much.
Yeah, well, and the other thing that really makes Anne just as bad a parent as the captain is the fact that all of the captain's problems are Nate's fault. Like, it's Nate's fault he doesn't want to go to Dartmouth, and that's why the captain's doing coke.
Yeah.
Because she makes that leap pretty damn quick.
Yeah,
you know. Well, you know your dad's been going through a lot lately, and if you weren't such a pain, then maybe he wouldn't be doing coke.
Yes. And then so back in the loft, Vanessa comes into Dan's room without knocking. At least she comes in the door, but she doesn't knock, and just lies down in bed with him. They talk about their views on sex. Vanessa slut shames Serena and is overall judgy, but does give Dan some good advice at the end.
Yeah. Vanessa, man, she would. I like, once again, Dan being like, no, you have to knock when you come in. And again, just lays down on the bed. But then the whole thing about slut shaming Serena and like, yeah, that's, you know, that's what girls like her are. But me, if it was me, these are the things I would want. It's like,
including she mentions a boarding school professor, which would assumably be somebody taking advantage of a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she was raped, basically.
Yeah, she. Yeah, if she was raped by a boarding school professor, And then she's going to shame her for that too. And yeah, just I nothing about Vanessa in this scene felt anything but ick.
Yeah.
You know, the whole like, well, this is what I would want if it were me. Obviously, Serena wouldn't want any of those nice things because she's slept with other people before. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, ridiculous. So then we get back to that.
Rid of Cedric is.
But yeah, good advice. Getting rid good of Cedric. Good advice about getting rid of Cedric. Football sheets.
Yeah.
Which, Rufus also mentioned later. Yeah,
exactly.
At the Waldorf penthouse, Blair tells Jenny about the Archibald Diamond Nate plans to give her. And Jenny is feeling guilty and reveals the masquerade mix-up. Blair, tears forming in her eyes, dismisses Jenny for good.
You can keep a secret, right? Jenny is the worst secret keeper.
Both Taylor and Layton killed the scene. They killed it.
Absolutely. I'm just like, I
you
just
see
love...
Taylor Jenny's struggling whether to tell her or not.
Yeah.
And knowing that, you know, what happened is probably going to happen, but she knows if Blair finds out on her own, it'd be 10 times
yep.
worse.
Blair made it clear, I don't like secrets. Yeah. And then she asked, I found the can you keep a secret because of Jenny's previous proving track record of she can't, you know. It was Eric.
Yeah, Nate isn't aware of that yet though,
so. Right, yeah, but well Blair, because Blair asks Jenny, can you keep a secret in yeah. this scene about the ring,
yeah,
and then that's when she comes clean. But what you were saying about
but that's like
act-
a little that's like a you know a little secret, it's gonna come out, you know.
Yeah just like I just love that bit in my, at least in my head, anytime anyone asks Jenny to keep a secret, I'm like, ooh.
Oh boy.
But in general, the rest of that scene though, you're dead on that Taylor Momsen, her acting, the conflict that you see tearing through her when, and Blair's reaction and Blair keeping it strong and fighting back the tears, like Leighton Meester, the two of them, which I would argue they're probably the two best actors mm-hmm. on this entire show. Yeah. So when they have a scene like that, it's because they also have such a great power dynamic where Blair always has that power, mm-hmm. but Jenny always has something in her back pocket.
Yeah.
You know, it was fantastic.
I agree. And that is the end of Act Two. So we get into Act Three. A very reserved Blair enters the dinner party.
That shot, that opening shot of Blair with the makeup and this bright, vibrant makeup and this just crushed, defeated sadness in her face. It got me emotional watching it. Yeah. It's just that juxtaposition. She is stunning. And mm-hmm. just it was like looking at a painting. Robin referred to her as an American Girl doll.
Yeah, she was dead inside.
Yeah,
she had no life to her.
Yeah, and she looks like an American Girl doll. It's stunning shot. The colors in the background, like everything about that scene, just tore my heart. You know. So good.
Yes. Another dream. This time it's Serena and Nate hooking up at the Shepherd wedding with Dan watching for pointers. The way the shots are cut, it leads me to believe that Blair is also kind of remembering this, you know, picturing this in her head at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm guessing this shot was kind of awkward to shoot because at this time, Penn and Blake were definitely dating at this point.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that they... I don't know any of the...
Well, it's kind of obvious to tell when they're... When they're making out, they are actually making out.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And like, just watch them around. Like, their hands are always like on each other. Uh-huh. Like, they're clearly a couple.
Oh wow, that's really funny.
But then they have to shoot this scene where, you know, Penn's like standing there watching his girlfriend make out with someone else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and which of course,
but it was a hilarious scene.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be awkward to imagine that? You know, yeah. You would feel awkward imagining it. I also, the thing that I love about this scene is that you get to see Chase Crawford be funny. Yes. You get to see Chase Crawford mm-hmm. open up and not be serious Nate all the time, but you get to see, you get to see the deep a little bit, yeah. You know, like you get to see him, you know, oh yeah, man, it works every time. Like, it's just, I love Chase Crawford yeah. in this scene,
yeah.
which again is that unreliable third person narrator. Like this, it's you know, your imagination is you projected back on you,
yeah,
and it was really Chase Crawford doing Dan Humphrey, and it was fucking brilliant, and it was yeah. dead on.
Yeah,
he was great.
Yes, I agree. And then so this time Dan wakes up to Rufus coming into the room, who sees Dan's laptop open to sensual massage. Rufus gives the same advice as Vanessa about changing the sheets.
Yeah. Dan, hide your business. You live in a very small loft.
He's in his room. I mean,
yeah, it's, you know, I just feel like everything he tries, like, you know, reading the Kama Sutra, the
I guess he just needs to find some people need to respect his boundaries and like knock when they come to his room.
I actually forgot to bring up the Kama Sutra thing, that he's reading the Kama yeah. Sutra, and how that is such a Dan Humphrey, like, wow, I need to know how to do this thing. What should I do? Read some books about it. I need to do research before I can enact this. It's so Dan Humphrey. I love it.
Yes. Vanessa and Jenny are talking about Blair and Nate, but also ostensibly about Rufus and Allison.
I want to actually turn back real quick to the conversation with Rufus and Dan, that here we do have good Rufus parenting. Yeah. And the whole, like, do we need to have that talk? No. And Rufus essentially gives the advice I've always given to my children: be safe, be respectful. It's those two things. Respect yourself, respect your partner, respect your boundaries, be safe for you, be safe for your partner. You know, it's all about those two things. Mm-hmm. And Rufus really brings that home. It's yeah. really be safe and, you know, remember
make
to
sure
take
both of you are ready to do what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. It was really good parenting. And then laying it down with the football sheets and Cedric. It was, you know. Bringing it on home with, like,
but also being the cool dad.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Also being the cool dad. So that was actually like the first time Rufus actually came through with some good parenting in this episode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
and
yeah,
then we had just gone on to
the Vanessa and Jenny talking about Blair and Nate, but also ostensibly Rufus and Lily.
Yeah, yeah, and Jenny kind of having that like spark. You see that Jenny, after what happened to her in the past couple days, you can imagine she needs her mom right now.
Yeah,
the men have just fucking abandoned her.
Yeah, she has no other women in her life,
and she has no positive no women in her life
at all. Yeah,
yeah,
except for now Vanessa, I guess, which
yeah
is
Vanessa and sort of Blair, who just told her she's cut off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
which knowing Blair and knowing Jenny, I can't imagine that is a for good cutoff, because I can imagine Blair seeing value in Jenny later on. But for now, she's cut off.
Yeah. Back at the dinner party, the captain is showing all the classic signs of excessive coke use. It's like, let's go through a checklist of, you know, stereotypical drugs.
Sniffs, like, all, constantly sniffing, like, manic, can't stay, you know, running a mile a minute. Give her the ring. Just give her the goddamn ring.
Let her try it on.
Let her try it on.
Yes.
Claps his hands.
Yeah. Yes. Way to go, Captain. Great acting.
You are on coke, Captain. captain.
Yes, and then at Vitrola, Chuck is joined by his father and the young woman from before. Apparently, Chuck was wrong about the relationship.
Yeah. And
they were actually talking business.
Yeah, and here Bart Bass shows up, and he's coming through.
Yeah.
You know, he's, hey, I'm going to, this is actually a person who works, she wants to be in finance, she wants to work her way up. She, what is it? I'm tired of writing stories about Titans, and I want to be one. Is this a new recurring character we're meeting here?
No, she's one and done.
Is the Victrola a new setting?
No.
Oh, are you kidding me?
So I know we're definitely giving Chuck some rightful props in this episode, but I will not take a chance to knock him down a little bit here. You know, Chuck clearly did not tell Lily about Bart because it was the right thing to do. He was just telling him out of revenge.
Oh, yeah. It was spiteful.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly spite. So.
Yeah. He was mad. He was mad and spiteful. And at the same time, Chuck reported what he saw, right? Like, yes, it was spiteful. He didn't say, I saw my dad making out with somebody. He said, I saw him pawing some... Mm-hmm. I saw him pawing at someone earlier on today. He didn't say any lies. You know?
Yes. I get the feeling, though, that Bart Bass is just the kind of guy that does that to pretty much every woman he meets.
Yep. Yeah. He's Governor Cuomo. Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I'm sure there are many women in his employ who have had a very uncomfortable long hug or kiss on the side of... Kiss on the cheek that's a little too
going
close.
Going back to the second episode, we know that both Bart and Chuck slept with the statue woman.
Yeah, slept with the statue, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. The Basses are classy. Keeping it classy. Keep it in the family.
Classy Bassies. But Bart does come through here. Bart does come through.
He does.
And
so we set up the Vitrola. You know, it looks like this is going to be a business opportunity. For
yeah. It's such a great, so much could take place in this location.
I think it's definitely mentioned a few times, but I don't think they actually ever come back to this location.
It's such a missed opportunity.
Because, I mean, it's not a set. It is an actual location.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
then you have to like
that
rent
is one
it
of,
out.
One of the great things about Gossip Girl is they do like shoot like all these like weird little tiny bars and stuff, you know, around Manhattan.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I get that.
You can't.
Is it actually the Victrola?
Not sure about that.
Okay,
I'm not enough sure.
Because I love that Victrola, like I said.
Outside the Waldorf penthouse, Nate confronts his father, whose response is to knock Nate to the ground. Luckily, the cops are right there. Nate tips him off to check the captain's pockets. Then Nate bribes the doorman to keep quiet. However, Blair spots everything through the window.
Yeah. Captain decking his son in the middle of the street. Not a good look. But like, and I love Nate just like, yeah, check his pockets. Like
but then also still covers it up at the same time. It's just weird.
He covers it up to the people upstairs. You know, he doesn't want to blow the deal. He doesn't want to do that, but he wants his dad to get like it's not going to come out. But like
he mentions like don't like talk to any reporters or anything. I think he says.
Oh, I thought he said if anyone asks,
yeah,
my father went home.
But like I was like, I thought that was like, you know, implying like, yeah, so he doesn't want to get out. He thinks he's gonna get arrested, but no one will find out because it's just drugs. You know,
because he's convinced we'll just go and pay my dad's bail, which we find out later.
He just needs to teach him a little lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on timeout, Dad.
Yeah. you're on coke timeout.
Yes. Chuck and Bart argue about Lily, but Bart will continue with the plans for the Vitrola.
Yeah. Chuck said, and Chuck's defense is great. Like, yeah. I don't see how any of this is my fault.
Yeah.
You know, like if she believed me, there's a reason. And Bart was like, God damn.
And he kind of, and then he's like, I'm going to go fix this. Like, I'll fix this. It's not, not a big deal.
Yeah. But like, you know, I really liked that Bart also showed that self-awareness of like, yeah, I'm pissed that my kid opened up his mouth, but he's right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go fix this. And cause his demeanor changes before he leaves. He goes from being angry to, all right, I'm going to go fix this, you know?
And then we get Blair confronts Nate about his father. Then Blair reveals that she knows about the masquerade mix-up. They break up again. Is this the end for Nair?
Blair fucking owns this scene. First of all, she doesn't cry. She just looks him dead in the eye, and then she says one of my favorite lines we've come across so far when she says, go, he needs you, I don't, and gets into the car. Boom. Like, good job.
Go Blair.
Good job, Blair.
Go Blair. And then so Dan surprises Serena with a romantic candlelit bedroom. Now it appears that Serena is the one overwhelmed by the moment.
Yeah, and here they actually come together and talk about it, mm-hmm. and it really is a very healthy interaction between them. I actually really loved that.
So she's had sex before, but she's never really cared about the people she's had sex with.
Yeah, and more importantly, the people that she's had sex with never really showed that they cared about her. Mm-hmm. You know, they never looked at her that way.
Yeah,
as she said.
And then we get Blair shows up at the Vitrola in Nate's place. The music is playing, and we quickly realize we are back to the opening scene.
Robin turned to me and goes, imagine you're booked to play a show, and you're up there singing, and someone just walks up there and starts taking off their clothes and singing right alongside you. I'm like, yeah, I'd kick them the fuck off this stage. Who does that? Like, they have an act they're performing, and you're just gonna go up there? I mean, granted,
I mean, it was a burlesque show, and she just kind of joined in.
Yeah, it was.
And yeah, who's gonna turn down Leighton Meester? You know, she's gonna.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not
that
saying,
Valentina slip dress.
Yeah.
We get that scene, and that is the end of Act 3. We move into the epilogue. Rufus is cleaning cobwebs at the gallery when Lily shows up, bottle in hand.
Yeah. And first of all, so for one, Rufus, you don't need to be a dick. But also, Lily, what are you doing? And we know what you're doing.
Yeah. But he was irritated, but like, he quickly got unirritated.
Yeah.
When he's like, oh, wait, this is... Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Aruga, aruga.
Yes. Revenge and just, you know, getting back with the old flame.
Yeah. But they didn't leave off. Did they leave off with that being ambiguous?
No, they do. We see another scene with them.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. They're in the final montage, yes.
Okay.
But we get back at the loft. Dan and Serena are building up to the moment. However, Serena, although not a virgin, reveals she has never had sex while in love. They both decide they are in no rush. And they just kind of end the episode cuddling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was beautiful. And,
great.
And, and real.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing happens, and it's real, and especially at that age when you're not sure. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a real healthy thing for people watching this show to see.
And then at
there's also a lot of that internalized misogyny in this scene too, with you see in Serena with her being like, you know, Dan says, wait, you've never, she goes, no, I wish. And it's like, why do you wish? Like, you're taught that this is supposed to be something, you know, but, you know,
yeah,
own your life, you know?
Yeah. But back at Nate's house, it turns out the captain is in deeper trouble than just a bag of cocaine.
Yeah. Embezzlement, his bail's set at $1 million. I do feel like Anne is a little shocked about the additional charges.
Yeah, I don't think she knew about that.
Yeah, I don't think she knew that he was under investigation. Yeah. I think that...
But she did know it was his coke.
Yeah, I think at this point we realize, like, she was thinking it was just going to be a simple go down, bail him out thing, too.
Of course, OC fans watching this back in 2007 were probably immediately familiar with this storyline, because it's basically the same storyline as Jimmy Cooper.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that off air
at
one point.
And then we end the episode with a montage set to Sum 41's With Me. We see Lily and Rufus lying on the floor of the gallery looking up at the art installation on the ceiling. Then we see Jenny knocking on her mother's door. So she's going to see her mom. Then we see a shot of Dan and Serena cuddling in bed, super cute. And then, of course, the music kicks up and we see in the limo, Blair and Chuck hooking up, and
Blair, Chuck.
Blair finally loses her virginity.
And Chuck, a couple things about that. Actually, there's something that I missed in an earlier scene, which was when she got up on stage, she asked Chuck to watch her drink, which to me, the last person I would want watching my drink. Although, once again, with Blair, she trusts Chuck.
Yeah.
She knows that Chuck's not going to cross that boundary with her.
And he does ask consent. Very clearly.
Have that note as well, that Chuck Bass asked for consent, exclamation point, yes, in my notes.
Yeah, so that was definitely a very clear writing choice.
Yeah. It was. But it was also... That glow up, it's the Chuck glow up, and it was the, but it showed so many other things, right? We talked earlier in the episode about the mutual respect that he has for Blair. He sees Blair as an equal. You know, he doesn't see her as a conquest. He doesn't see her as an object the way he has so many other women. He sees her as an equal. And there's that notion of, has Chuck always had a thing for Blair? He's always flirting with her, but not the way that he flirts with anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, there is always a level of innuendo,
but it's not as predatory as he is with everyone else.
Yeah. It's always almost
a game, kind of just, you know, playing a game, like a playful flirty game.
Yeah.
Like a normal, closer to normal flirting.
Exactly. Closer to, and even could be considered normal flirting among certain friends. You know, I definitely have my friends that I would have been able to talk to that way, you know? Mm-hmm. But he always has shown respect, and maybe has he always been in love with Blair? Has that been there underneath? And we just have, you know, and I hadn't been paying much attention to it.
And, you know, if we are keeping track, that is, I think, the last diversion in Upper East Side is now gone.
Dan.
No, he's not in Upper East Side.
Oh, you're right.
So you got Dan and Jenny and possibly Vanessa. We don't know.
Eric, if he counts.
We don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, he could possibly be.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe. Who knows? And then, so the next episode is called 17 Candles. Any predictions?
Well, I'm guessing a birthday party. I'm guessing it's a spinoff of the 1980s John Hughes classic 16 Candles.
Yeah, so the Max episode preview reads, Blair puts on a happy face for her 17th birthday party.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
And do we want to take a break before we go into segments?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. And we are back for some segments. We got a new segment this week. We're going to talk about This Week in Fandom. So I've been going back and reading the message boards from the now defunct Television Without Pity. I don't know if you were familiar with that website at all.
No, never heard of it.
So it started out as like a Dawson's Creek recap site. But then, they start recapping other shows, and they were very funny. Obviously, with the name Television Without Pity, they are pretty merciless on the show.
Yeah.
But then there was message boards. And the reason why they're good ones to go look back is they were very strict about their episode threads. It's like they would lock them and delete anything that was off topic at all. So I've been going back and just kind of reading them to kind of see the live reactions to the fans. So this week we had definitely a lot of talk about Chuck and Blair's amazing chemistry.
Yeah.
Almost universal hatred of Vanessa.
Check.
And a few Chuck boys are starting to pop up. Are you a Chuck boy yet?
No, I'm not.
Not actually not a Chuck boy. And yes, Leighton Meester getting a lot of acting praise.
Yeah.
So definitely agree with pretty much everything there except for the Chuck boy.
And you know what? I think my son, when he was watching it, he was saying wait until later, You're going to change your opinions on some characters. And
has he seen the whole thing already?
I think he's seen through season three, partway through season three. Okay. We should have him on as a guest.
If he's interested, that's fine.
He might be. That'd be funny.
All right. And then so we will go on to episode grades. This is a odd number, so you go first this week.
I felt like all in all the episode was an A for me. I really enjoyed I thought the acting was really good, especially with the powerhouse scene between Jenny and Leighton Meester. That scene is so brilliant. I thought that aside from not finding it a very fashionable episode as opposed to other ones, I found it to be a good episode. I enjoyed it. I gave it an A.
Yes. I agree completely. It was definitely an A episode. I thought the writing might have been the best writing of the series. We had the unreliable narrator usage twice. We also had the medias res the beginning. So yeah, the writing was good. You got great acting all around. You had Taylor and Leighton scene was probably the highlight of the episode. But also you got to see a little bit of Chase Crawford's comedy. Penn was his usual funny, self. Yeah, his writing is very uneven throughout the series, but he's also, I think, on the same level as Taylor and Leighton.
Yeah.
But he doesn't get as good as storylines as Leighton or Jenny, Blair, or even Chuck. Chuck is going to start getting a lot of good storylines going forward.
Oh, okay.
As we already saw, you get the sympathy with the dad stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny because Bart is just not the terrible parent that all of the other parents are, yet he raised Chuck. which again, of course, if we're...
I mean, he's pretty bad. He is very cold. And
he is. I guess
all he really gives Chuck is money.
Oh, that's fair.
That's the only thing he gives him. He has a very nice place to live. He never wants for anything, but there's zero emotional support.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Zero, probably zero parenting in general, other than, telling him not to drink before noon.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair too, yeah.
So speaking of parenting, moving on to Stockwatch, who do you have going up this week?
Okay, so I thought Nate was going to tank from the start of this episode, but I feel like he creeped up this episode. I felt like Nate went up because he turned his dad in. He He stood up to his mom. Like he kept, you know, yes, he kept losing those battles, but Nate himself, he's working towards something, and he's actually put in a little bit of the fight.
He turned his dad in, but it was just turning his dad in. Remember, we talked about it. He put his dad on timeout.
My God, yeah, and he also lost Blair. Yeah, Nate didn't go up, did he? I felt like Nate was going to go up this episode because
he felt like Nate.
Because I like Nate, but it really didn't, did it?
No.
No, it didn't.
Anyone go up?
I mean, Chuck went up. Actually, Chuck really went up. Like,
so for me, I got Chuck. He got the good storylines, very sympathetic storylines.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to ask for consent.
Yeah.
A plus, bare minimum there. Then we got also Dan and Serena both, you know, they had a great episode, I thought. You know, they were very cute.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They talked, they communicated, and they ended up, you know, having their nice little cuddle session.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because I feel like there was so much stock dropping in this that
So yeah, I think that's it for I will also give Blair a stock up. She was sad, but she became by the end of the episode she had her moment with Nate. She took control, and she lost her virginity, which that's what she's been wanting to do since the pilot episode.
Since pilot, yeah, and she's been wanting to do that since the pilot. And there's also that question of are there feelings there that were just untapped to begin with between. They've had such a flirty relationship already that I can see Blair going up. That one's tough for me. For me, Dan and Serena, definitely, yeah, I could see them going up. And I didn't really pay enough attention to that originally. But I felt, yes, Dan and Serena went up. I think I was really focused on everyone who went down this week.
Go ahead and get into it.
Yeah, Vanessa. What the fuck, Vanessa? Like, everything, but every scene with Vanessa was cringe. Every scene with Vanessa just was like, this is not the fun person from last week that I really enjoyed. I find her to be creepy and annoying in this episode. Stock dropped. Rufus's stock dropped. Rufus's Dogecoin just slipping through his fingers with that episode. You know, has a great parenting moment with Dan, but just shits the bed with Jenny, shits the bed with letting his business out there for the kids, lying about it, all of that stuff. Rufus tanks, Captain tanks, and tanks. Lily kind of goes up a little. Lily kind of owns her shit. She shows that she can actually be a parent, even if it's not to her kid. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to give it to her, though. Too little for it to actually go up. But yeah, I just felt like across the board, stock was
Stocks. For me, we got, Rufus, obviously, bad parenting. Taking out his anger out on his kids, taking his anger out on Lily initially, being a bad parent to Jenny. And we also have Nate stocked down for me because he was.
Right on that. I had him going up for standing up to the captain. But
the beginning of the episode was so bad. And even that standing up to the captain was just, spiteful.
Well,
But the beginning of the episode with Jenny. And trying to bribe this younger girl, just so scummy. And then the media pivot, definitely his father's son in that moment.
Yeah.
Anyone else go down? So we got Rufus. We got him. Lily was kind of net. Even Allison going down off screen because we just found out she's cheating.
Well, confirmed that she's cheating, and also. You know, you have Jenny in the end when she's like, "Mom, it's time to come home." And now it's like, wow, where does that go?
Yeah. You know? And of course, obviously, Vanessa. because she is the worst and everyone hates her for a reason.
Man,
the writers just do her dirty.
I really thought when she came on, I was like, wow, why are people giving her such, why are there these haters? And damn, is she terrible.
They set episode. Her up for failure.
They did.
It's like, Dan and Serena are obviously were the plan, like, main couple of the series from, you know, before they started. And they just bring in this interloper who's obviously just going to be hated by the fans.
Yeah. Yeah. She was done dirty.
Yeah.
Her writing was awful. Like, for all of the different, the writing for everybody else in the episode was, even the people whose stock went down, it was good writing.
Yeah. Yeah, she was just the worst.
Yeah, just the
like,
worst.
Like the worst possible thing she could do, she did it.
Yeah,
in every situation.
Yeah, creeper.
So that is our stock watch. Who do you have for best outfit?
I'll be honest. I struggled this episode, and I even went back after watching it again last night, because I watch a second time, take more thorough notes. Last night, I even went back again and just started flipping through, because the most memorable outfit, obviously, is Blair's outfit. But I didn't love it. I didn't love that dress. I loved the look. I loved that American Doll look that she had. But I think that the thing that I liked the most was Chuck's suit when he was trying to propose the idea to Bart.
Yeah,
like that
we're right in the same wheelhouse, because I picked the same suit, and it was actually kind of similar to what I wore for New Year's Eve.
Oh, awesome.
I did not have the pinstripes. I was just a gray tick suit with a purple shirt, and I had a silver bow tie instead of a regular tie.
Yeah, and Chuck rocks the bow ties. I mean, later, yes, in the episode, he has the bow tie, and that
and purple is also his color.
Yeah, yeah.
He is definitely into the royal purple.
Yeah, and he kills it, and it's kind of easy to pick Chuck because he is just so well dressed in pretty much every scene. Yeah.
Except for the athletic ones.
Right. Yeah.
He can't quite knock down the athletic wear.
Yeah.
So that is it for the segments. You have anything to plug?
At this moment, I don't think so. I think that this is February, right? This time this is out, so I don't have anything other than my socials and whatnot going on at this moment.
Which are,
you can find me on Instagram, steve.marchion, that's MARCHION. You can also find me at Steve the Weed Wizard on TikTok. And you can find me on Spotify as well, Steve Marchion. Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, iHeart. Wherever you can find this podcast, you can also find my music.
All right. So I actually saw a new show recently that I enjoyed. It was called Fleischman Is in Trouble.
That's a phenomenal show. Yes, I love that.
Disney Plus and Hulu. With starring Jesse Eisenberg and Claire Danes.
Yeah.
And then you got Adam Brody and the other woman's name? Lizzie Kaplan as the best friends. Of course, Adam Brody from the OC. So, you know, probably some crossover with our audience.
Yeah, and also from How I Met Your Mother, right?
Was he in that?
Isn't that the husband? Isn't that her husband?
Whose husband?
The best friend.
Robin?
Yeah. Who's her husband in the show?
Barney?
No. No, the in Fleischman's in Trouble... And it's not Barney. I'm talking about the main guy in, I can't think of his name.
Jesse Eisenberg?
No. The main guy in How I Met Your Mother, isn't he the husband of the Lizzie best Kaplan. Friend?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I was going with it.
Josh Radnor.
Josh Radnor. That's it.
Yes.
Because he was also he starred in that show about the musical, the high school putting on a musical. anyway.
Okay. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at NonJudgingBreakfastPod. You can also follow us on Twitter at NJBPod. And also, you can find us on Facebook. We have a community there, so you can take a seat at the non-judging breakfast table. Just search for us at Non-Judging Breakfast Pod. And what else, Steve?
Please go ahead and like and upvote and follow us and subscribe wherever you get our podcasts, because it really helps with our discoverability.
Yeah, definitely leave us some reviews. We want to get some reviews.
Yeah, talk to us. And also send us emails. Tell us how we're doing.
Yes. Non-judgingbreakfastpod@gmail.com. Yes. So we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about season 1, episode 8, 17 Candles.
Yeah. Which I'm assuming is a play on the John Hughes classic 16.
We'll get into that next week.
Yeah.
Yep. Until next time, you know you love us. XOXO.